Welcome to the Next Level Leadership Podcast, your place for learning everything about being a new sales leader. I'm Derek Jankowski, your host. And today I have Garris Young joining us on the show. Garris, welcome to the podcast.
Derek, thanks for having me.
Hey, before we jump in with the questions and everything, could you just give everybody a quick your background? Like, how did you end up as senior director of sales?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always started the story with talking about there's two groups of people, right? There's one group of people that wake up one day and go, love sales. That's where I want to be. And then there's the second group that where sales just kind of fell into the lap. And I would say I'm the latter group. So I started off with my major in marketing, thought I came out, I was going to do marketing, thought it was going to be a lot of fun and pomp and all that. And it was not at all what I had actually thought it was going to be. It was a lot more data driven. It's less what you would actually see in that side. So I did about a year or so with experiential marketing with some of the major clients and then decided to look elsewhere, dabbled in recruiting for a bit. And my first sales in that recruiting process, I've actually gotten myself exposed in sales, where I was doing mostly in sales recruiting for salespeople. That's where my world of sales started kind of coming in. And it was not until when I came across Five Stars in the Wild, Five Stars being one of the customer engagement platform where they focus on a lot of small businesses on the loyalty platform, where my first initial reaction is still not, hey, I want to be in sales, but I love the idea of, you know, rewarding customers, bringing them customers to come back. And one of the first opening they had available was a loyalty consultant, which essentially translated into an outside sales rep. And that's when I was started my world in sales, you know, just really pushing a product that I very, very much believed in. And so I did really, really well at Five Stars for about a couple of years. I didn't think that I was a better salesperson than anybody else on my team. I just thought that I believed in a product more so than what they had. And that actually, you know, cemented my foundation in sales, where sales is all about transfer of confidence. As long as you believe in a product, everything else is essentially secondary. Moved my way up into Five Stars, and now I'm the director of sales here at Upkeep, where we focus on a maintenance management platform and grew the team from essentially zero people to where we are today.
Wow. So you literally just said this product is something amazing, I'll sell it, and totally changed up your career for the next 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, all absolutely. Right. And it was a very interesting outcome that turned that into a little trip to a restaurant, and it got a loyalty card into the career that I have today. So looking back on it, it was pretty wild.
Cool. That is a fun story, man. All right. So as you think back to when you first became a sales leader, what's a mistake that you made? What's something that you messed up and had to learn from?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. And thinking about it over the last, that was about 7 years ago when I was about 2 years into an individual contributor role, I was given an opportunity to lead a team. We essentially had started a team from scratch, and I was one of the more tenured person on the team there. I think the first instinct is, okay, well, now my quota essentially turned from that one individual quota to have into 5x, right? Everyone essentially rolls up to you. So your first instinct is, I got to carry everyone on my back. You don't think about managing the team. You don't think about developing the people that you have. You think about still as an individual contributor to how to hit that quota. So naturally, what happens is you put everyone on your back and you try to now 5x your own quota and get everyone through the finish line. And that burns yourself out really, really quickly, right? One, you're not developing, you're not having a professional or personal development conversation with the rest of your team. And two, the rest of the team are not really learning much and you're essentially feeding them fish as opposed to teaching them how to fish. So, you know, as any new managers, I've always, you know, it's always really hard to kind of pivot the mindset from an IC into a team manager, because that's what you know. That's what you've been doing for years, and all of a sudden having to make that pivotal moment, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah. So what would you recommend somebody do instead? What do you wish you had done instead of that?
Yeah. So I think you start learning how to have these coaching conversations right away and really understand where the sales formula had broken with the team. And instead of actually feeding information and jumping into answers right away, you start asking more of the probing and discovery questions less you would with a prospect. And you start understanding where the problem lies, help them navigate through the problem instead of solving for the problem for them right away. That is going to pay dividend in the long term when you're managing a bigger and bigger team as you continue to move up level. That is one of the skill sets I would believe it's a very, very fundamental skill to learn as a first-time manager. And it's also something that you would have to master. It takes time.
Okay, very cool. What would you say your superpower is as a leader?
Yeah, sales is a very emotional game. And I've seen a lot of sales leaders that I've worked with, or even salespeople in general, unable to separate out the emotion from the reality and really the data. I think I naturally, I'm a very data-driven person. Data has to make sense for me in order for me to really make a decision. So I'm able to really start separating out all the, I want to say excuses or stories or reasoning of why we're not able to actually bring this in from what the data is actually telling me. And for my side, those two things have to be married together. So separating out the emotion from sales definitely helped, you know, drive me across all these years and help me make the decisions I've been able to make to drive the team across.
Could you give an example?
Yeah. So
quality. Yeah,
absolutely. So oftentimes you have a lot of these one-on-one conversations with a team member, and you know, you can always talk about like, hey, we're not pacing towards where we need to be right now or where we are. And you try to diagnose exactly what's going on, right? And so you're always going to get these reasoning. Well, the leads are not great. I'm not getting a whole lot of connections. I'm not getting a whole lot of wins, or that the product is just not where you need to be. So you start validating, you start verifying some of the things that you're looking at, because there's two things, right? One, again, sales is a very emotional job, and that ties back into how they're perceiving and where the reality starts blending with the emotion. So as a frontline sales leader, your job is not just to be a psychiatrist for your sales team. Your job is to also help them validate what or not the emotions drive them towards a close. You cannot get mixed in with an emotion with them. It's our job as sales leaders to watch your team's back. Are we driving toward the same close, and are we solving the right problem here? And if we're not, I would say this frontline sales leader is going to be the first person to really help stop that. And so going in and running those Salesforce reports typically and having revenue enablement manager is going to help you validate whether or not the team's emotion is actually going towards the right way. And oftentimes the data might actually help you look at a bigger picture than what it really is. You know, especially if they had one or two instances where it gets them into an emotional spinoff, we need to actually be able to pull them out and go, hey, let's look at the bigger picture here, because the data is actually telling us otherwise.
So what would you look for in the data? Like, you know, what reports are you building or asking somebody to build?
Yeah. So with any sales reps, you're looking at a sales math, right? Regardless, I don't care which level you're in. You're in SDR, you're a BDR, you're an AE. It's all about the funnel. It's all about the sales math. You have a goal that you need to hit, and here's a formula on how to get there. These formulas are essentially the input. They're measured by the output. But it's our job as frontline sales leader to really look at the inputs and whether or not those inputs are accurate, because the formula tells us that if the input comes in, the output should be out, right? So then you follow back the track from all the way from the end and figure out where the sales math have went wrong. Usually what happens is where the first number that you have actually went wrong, whether it's conversion rate, whether it's ASP, whether it's the number of input that you have, if the number is actually not matching up to the sales math, then you can go in and diagnose and see exactly what's going on and figure out where the data is actually telling you. Are we not having enough connections? Are we not having enough demos? Or are we just taking on some of the lower deal sizes segments that we might actually need to look into a different segments there? So then crafting up that coaching plan through that data is going to help you get that buy-in from the team and you are going to feel a lot better about the coaching and the recommendations that you're making for the team.
Gotcha. So if somebody's, you know, their win rate, say, is off, you're figuring out if everybody's win rate is down, how are you determining, I guess, the way I think about it is whether it's a controllable or not. Whether the rep controls, you know, or can influence that versus COVID is just screwing everybody up.
Yeah, you definitely don't look at it on a higher level. You're looking at it from a team level, and you're looking at it from the individual level. And you're always going to be benchmarking between your team and also along with the rest of your staff, and especially in the specific example with one-on-one conversation with the team, right? You're looking at everyone else's conversion level is about 25%, whereas everyone's looking at about 4x coverage, where this particular person had all the input that they had, and go like, I'm running so many meetings, I'm just not closing for whatever reason. Then you're diagnosing and figuring out, well, your close rate is about a third of what everyone else is doing. So let's compare and figure out where the gap is, right? And helps you narrow down again, the focus is there. The first thing that a lot of team would try to do is try to, you know, think about everything else that are uncontrollable for them. But oftentimes what you're going to find as you're looking at some sort of course data, you're looking back at some of the Salesforce notes, you see a lot of the controllable that we can actually fix. And to your point, there's a lot of things that are uncontrollable, COVID being one of the prime examples there. But for us, we're going to be controlling what we can control, so that finding those controllables is going to be very important for your team to be successful.
Cool. Yeah, I feel you there. So comparing each rep sort of to the team helps you understand exactly, right, how to move forward and nail down that coaching plan. All right. So Garris, before you got promoted, what's something that you thought was true about leadership or about being a sales leader that once you were in the job, maybe not right away, but at some point you realize it's just a total misconception, not true at all?
What's something that I believe was true about sales leadership that was not true on the job? I think a lot of that, if you're a sales rep, you're looking at a sales leader, and you're looking at the whether it's a sales manager, director of sales, whatever it is, you're oftentimes thinking, oh man, this is just, you know, one person, you know, carrying out a bigger numbers. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of puffs with that comes with the title, right? You know, you now are in, you know, in tables, and you now have a table stake in conversations you never had before. But oftentimes what I'm finding is that those are essentially just the day-to-day mundane tasks that you would rather actually pawn off and then also be with your team, as opposed to really having those, you know, those conversations. And those become a lot of time suck, where the time priority becomes extremely important for you to manage. And I think one of the things I've learned very, very earlier on is that making changes as a sales leader is so much slower than you would as an individual contributor. You always have to think about a month or 2 months ahead of the things that you're looking to make, because not only do you have to make the changes for yourself, you have to make the changes alongside with 7 or 8 other people that you're working with, getting buy-in, mm-hmm. you know, doing the same thing again, creating, you know, maybe making some mistakes, and then refocus the team back into the main task. The process, essentially, you slow roll yourself into the changes. So I think that pace of the change that you're trying to influence is much, much slower than what a lot of people that I talked to had imagined, and myself included.
Okay. Great, man. And then is there any general advice that you have, or advice that you wish you had gotten, you know, in the earlier days of leading a team?
Yeah, what helped me a lot is really having mentor that have done it before and be there and coach you into making sure that their mistakes are being taken on, right? So you're not making the same mistakes again. first-time managers are definitely an investment from the company's end, because they're trusting somebody that had never done the role before to now manage the livelihood of about five or six people. So they're making that investment, and I think we need to actually make sure that we can protect that investment by not making as much mistakes as possible, because the mistakes that a new manager makes, you make it on the back of the people that work for you, that reports to you, that look for your guidance. So it's important for us to learn as quickly as possible and get a mentor, have conversations, play out scenarios, or maybe even role play some of those conversations out, because some conversations you're having are not going to be pleasant. And some conversations you're having here, you need to make sure that you're going towards the right direction. Hiring and recruiting is going to be one of the newer things that you're going to start thinking about. Hiring people for culture and as opposed to what they had performances wise in the previous other companies, and how they're going to work with your existing team today is going to be extremely huge, especially in the sales team. Culture is everything. And at Upkeep, one of our core value is, you know, grit over prestige, which means that doesn't matter what you have done in the previous companies before, it's all about what you're putting in towards your current role right now. And it's all about really just integrating yourself into a new environment. So, and that leads into a lot of the conversations you would have, where you may have higher performers that are going to be detrimental to the overall team, because from a cultural standpoint, from a buy-in standpoint, or from anyone else, it's important for us to actually distinguish, you know, performances from the culture, and culture always comes before performance, because one person will drag down the entire team. Yeah.
How do you guys screen for culture, like for culture fit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think cultural fit is, it's so subjective from person to person, right? The first thing that I think about is, how would this person deal with change, especially in a startup? Changes oftentimes create friction, and that's oftentimes where a lot of the cultural shift starts happening. So is that person going to be good for the culture today, or is that person going to be good, you know, for the long haul, and you're hiring for the long haul? You can quantify, you can try to put it in the scorecard where, you know, how is this person going to work in their department, but ultimately at the end of the day, you're thinking about, you know, the overall company and also the people that they're going to be working with. And if I throw that person into the mix today with the rest of the team here, performance and everything aside, can that person work well with the rest of the team? Or is that person going to come in and just try and tramp over the rest of the team for their own personal gain? I think the question I'm also asking myself is that person going to be putting the team on their back, or is that person going to be putting themselves first over the team? And the expectation that I would have is, you're putting the team first before yourself, because when a team succeeds, you'll succeed.
Cool. Okay. So those are excellent. Like, I love how you think of, you're asking yourselves these questions. And I know you can't script out every possible question in an interview, like knowing what you're looking for, just like in discovery, that's the move, right? So if you're sitting in an interview and you know what you're looking for, like, what are some indicators that tell, say, for example, that somebody is not going to handle change well?
Yeah, I find that asking situational questions typically would be able to actually get those questions, would be able to actually get those indicators out. You know, give me an example of when this happens, or tell me about some of the changes you are dealing with. Have them be as open-ended as possible and have them tell you, right? You're going to start sniffing out these stories out really, really quickly, whether or not it actually happened or had never happened, how descriptive were they? And you start asking more, you know, uncovering and clarifying questions and go, well, what had happened? What was the result? What did you learn from that? Having somebody to really speak out their subconscious thoughts, regardless of whether or not the story is correct or had actually happened, helps you understand where that person's moral value lies when it comes down to changes, teams, and so on and so forth.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, hey, I know we're at time. I want to let you know I really appreciate you coming on the show. Really good shit, man. Appreciate you sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
In this episode, Garrett and I talk about getting a mentor. If you've been leading people for less than 3 years, you're going to be running into the same challenges as other leaders in that same situation. And to help you solve those problems, plus ones you haven't even run into yet, we built the Next Level Mastermind. It's a weekly call where you can get help with your specific challenges, plus learn something every week that will make you a better leader. The link is in the comments. Come check it out. See you there.